by Foundations of Writing on the Academic Agency. To write clearly will help you to think clearly. The ability to communicate ideas in lucid prose is foundational to success in many areas, and it is a basic requirement in every walk of life. You will learn the parts of speech and come to understand the core functions of the English language, sentence construction and syntax, punctuation, style, and common mistakes. Once you see how mistakes are made, you will not unsee them. You will know for the rest of your life. Foundations of Writing. Buy it now.
So like I said, I am done talking about Trump done, but people keep trying to say that my vision is fundamentally liberal. Ralph from Right Reaction made a second stream on this, link below, as did a chap I have not heard of called Anglo Author. Now it strikes me that although I have talked on streams at length about perennial traditionalism, Thomas Carlyle, Julius Evola, René Guénon, I have never actually made a video outlining what perennial traditionalism entails. And it's fair to say that my vision video somewhat took their teachings for granted. Maybe I was guilty of overestimating what people have read and understood. Now you can see it right there in my original script, and again there, that I was taking this for granted. But I will admit that I did not spend much time fleshing out what this means, because to do so would have taken too long for that video. Anyway, let's have a little look at the clips from Ralph and Anglo Author before I respond. I'll just take the parts I consider to be the heart of each of their arguments, and then I'll respond after we take a look at these clips.
Well, A came up with a vision for the right. It is a liberal vision, and I'll explain why it is a liberal vision with precision. And you can hold me to it if you believe I'm wrong. I'll open the stream up. It's a liberal vision for a particular set of reasons, and it claims to be a vanguard vision of the right, which it isn't. I'm going to have a quick look why. So let's just quickly share my screen. Let's go to Basics 101. Are we sitting comfortably, all those in the academy? Right, forces in politics. Left versus right, revolutionary versus reactionary, conservative versus progressive. The advancement over time, Cthulhu swims left versus the resistance, left versus right. Easy peasy. There's another orthogonal force that occurs. The governing versus the governed, the ruling versus the ruled, power versus the people. These four forces have been in tension, and they have gone through punctuation points, which the NRX can easily demonstrate effortlessly. We're way past that. We demonstrated a long time ago. And if you break this down, we'll see that if I took three motifs, three ontological ideas from these principles of position, what would I call them? Reactionary or conservative thinking is built bottom up on the state of nature, blood, soil, and spirit. Simple examples for academic agent, an Englishman in England under Christ, an Englishman in England under paganism. God forbid, with the ordered data points, an Englishman in England under Islam. All three propagate the immutability of the negatropic, anti-entropic force that preserves order. On the left, no blood, no Englishman, anti-racism. Marxism is materialistic. No nation, no boundaries, anti-borders, open borders, deterritorialization. No faith, dialectic materialism, naturalism, anti-theism. Okay, this has been these two battles, left to right. What is a liberal and what is a liberalism? And why am I going to demonstrate trivially that academics, A's ontology is liberal? Is liberalism abstracted the principle of nature, the principle of an Englishman in England under God, to be a citizen with rights and values enforced by law. The man, his flesh, his land, his spirit, England, was abstracted into an English citizen in country number 17B under the codification of precedent law. Liberal ideas and liberal ontologies will not speak to blood and soil and spirit. One way we identify them as being liberal is that they don't mention blood, soil, or spirit in any derivative form. I'm going to show you at the histogram word count of the transcripts of AA's videos to show you that not once does he mention the words England, Englishman, Christ, Christian, white, European. At no point does he mention any external threat to the principle of blood and soil and spirit as used by the words England, Englishman, Christ, Christian, Yorkshire, Hampshire. He doesn't mention the predatorial threats to this, like demographics, replacement, Muslims, non-whites, non-English. So if an ontology only uses concepts in its object model that are concepts from liberalism, it has no grounds to be even deemed anything other than a liberal ontology. Quick autotranscript, word histogram, minus non-relevant words. Let's have a little look-see. Let's zoom this puppy up a bit. And what do we get for the word counts, for the transcripts of the vision? The word counts go, forget, is 16 counts for Trumpton, 14 counts for Shire, 13 counts for community, 12 counts for life. If I take number must out, I get local. So Trumpton, Shire, community, life, local. No English, no England, no Scotland, no Scots, no God, no Christ, no Christianity, no blessed plot. No attack from the outside, no foreigners, no predation, no globalization, no denigration. None of the principal concepts of reactionary thinking, arguably from, say, even something at the modern branch, say, Immanuel Kant. Nothing from Kant through to Hegel, to Heidegger, through to Schopenhauer, through to Nietzsche, to Evelyn, even referenced in this, in quotes, vision. This is an illiberal academic exercise. It has absolutely nothing to do with a vision for the right. It's been a hard fucking day out here. You tell me in the chat, am I missing something here? If I made the claim Trumpton belongs to England, Trumpton is God's own country. Trumpton is English, more English than England itself. I would assume that this was a reactionary message rooted in God, King, country, rooted in God, King, and Trumpton, rooting in an Englishman being the King of Trumpton forever. And I might have a pro forma reactionary message, not a revolutionary, radical, or vanguard message for the right. It would be a pro forma, pastiche rendition of a reactionary statement. But it's not even that. It's Trumpton, Shire, community, number, loss, local, vision, Trump for bakery, traditional, business, social, rights, property, needs, movements, inhabitants. Its ontology at a surface glance is trivially liberal.
That academic agent is interesting because all those guys, the kind of culture around the AA sphere is like all those guys, they understand that, like, you know, even if they're joking, they're all kind of like into autocracy and monarchy and all that, you know, that like they might joke about it, but they all kind of get it. They're like, you know, they get the stupidity of modern conservative politics, say. Okay. Sorry, I'm just trying to get this thing right. And they might joke about having a czar, but it's like kind of half serious, you know? But academic agent himself, of all those guys, he seems to be, you know, still like committed to the Enlightenment. And, you know, I'm guessing that he probably considers himself to be a classical liberal. I'm not positive about that, but if I had to guess, I would say that he's not quite, you know, as on the monarchist side as some of his friends and allies are. But I think it's just very interesting because, you know, I don't think that there's any saving the Enlightenment. Okay. Like there's no, at this point, like there's no, it's like, you know, in Mean Girls, there's that line, they're like, stop trying to make whatever happen. You stop trying to make the Enlightenment happen, academic agent. Okay. It's not going to happen. I mean, it literally is like, if you keep backing up to the Enlightenment and trying to run something forward, you get all these downstream problems of retardation, you know? So I thought this video was like a great example of some of that. So in this video, he's addressing a common critique that he gets and that all the AA sphere guys get. Is there another name for that? The AA sphere? Anyways, the critique is, you know, you spend a lot of time addressing the problem and diagnosing modernity, but you don't offer any alternative. You don't offer any viable solution. Okay. So Academic Agent made this video to do that, ostensibly to say, okay, well, here's the alternative. Now, first of all, right off the bat, before we even look at the specifics of this video, I'm going to say that the whole project is doomed. And the reason why is that, I mean, yeah, I hear this all the time too. Like, what's the alternative? Like, oh, the problem with the right is that we don't have any, we've got to invent a new alternative to this like liberal world that we're trapped in. And I say, no, that's stupid. We don't have to invent an alternative. Inventing a new worldview, that's a liberal project. Like, that's just, you're wrapping yourself up in the same stupid mentality. No, we just have to go back to reality, okay? It's not, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have to go back to what's always worked for healthy human societies, which is basically, you know, like what the Russians always advocated is orthodoxy, autocracy, and nationalism, you know? I mean, basically, you know, a sovereign nation with an autocratic governance that is all upheld and dedicated to, you know, a state religion, a religion that is common and that undergirds and gives purpose and direction to everything.
Now, the fundamental problem here is the one that Guinan and Avila also faced. Perennial traditionalism is universal, while Ralph and Anglo-Ortho are both outlining very particularist visions of tradition in their respective videos. I actually made a video about particularism versus universalism before here. And again, I'll link that in the show notes. As you'll see, if you watch that, I believe that particularism has significant competitive advantage over universalism in the long run. However, I wanted a vision for the whole right, not just Englishmen or Americans or Christians or pagans. People from all over the world watch this channel, and traditionalists from all over the world have a problem with the globo homo, regardless of where they come from. In fact, Morgoth spoke to some of the problems with getting caught up on particular denominations in a recent video. And again, I'll link this in the show notes. Let's hear what he has to say.
But the problem is, that's how we got here in the first place. We got to this point because of that kind of reductionist objective standing. So this is when you see people trying to present the facts and the data, to trying to be reasonable about it, and it doesn't work. So what they should really be doing, in my view, is going down the side of putting a value on the world, which is much more religious. And this is why I think that there's going to be a return to religion, because I just don't see anything about the normal standard liberalistic mindset which can survive in a civilization which is going to go through what we are facing now. And so when I see, like, and this is obviously, again, this has been on my mind a lot, like, what is it that you're bringing to the fight? How is it, what is it that you've got to deal with this without a return to some different way of thinking entirely? Ontologically is a posh word which describes this, I think. So how do you, what are you actually going to be bringing to this? And good people find that they don't have the tools. They don't have the tools for the job. So yeah, this person is a good person. And this is, you know, we can begin to bring these things back. And it begins to get you through the darkness. It begins to be a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. Now, the thing is, when you begin to talk about, because it is spirituality, it is a different way of thinking entirely. And I think one of the things that gets in the way of this, and it's certainly gotten my way, I mean, I'm still don't class myself as religion, but again, something like what Lewis is saying here, he's taking you back in little baby steps to at least begin to let you see how you can think in different ways. So you don't have to get into all the, well, the Protestants did this and the Catholics did this and this is universal and, well, I want to be a pagan because it's more authentic and all of this rubbish, all of these arguments that just go on and on and on. It's all pointless. What that is that, again, it's deploying the mentality of the debunkers. It's deploying the mindset that got us into this problem in the first place.
Now, it seems to me that perennial traditionalism gets around this problem because of its view that there is a transcendent, absolute truth. Let's call it God, that is expressed in particular manifestations across the world in all the various religions and denominations. If I had a map of the basic picture, it would look like this. Now, before all of the people of various faiths watching this start going crazy at each other and at me, and Lutherans and Catholics and Orthodox Christians start fighting each other and fighting the pagans and so on, just hold up. First, no one in their right mind is going to call Carlyle or Evola or Guénon liberal thinkers. They are, especially Evola, just about some of the least liberal thinkers that you can think of. The fact that they sought to distill capital T tradition down to its essence based on what was common across cultures at the spiritual, esoteric and symbolic levels does not mean that their project was liberal, or that they sought world peace, or that they tried to deny each locality and each particular tradition its particular manifestations. What they wanted to do was to define what tradition was in relation to modernity, to crystallize what it entailed everywhere at a spiritual, metaphysical, and abstract level, and then to diagnose the process by which Western civilization has degenerated from its embodied traditional forms. They looked to the East because at that time, at the time that Evola and Guénon were doing their research, the East was more traditional than the West. And even though there were obvious differences obvious to absolutely everybody, they might still learn about more about what animates traditional people by looking outside the West to where such people were still enduring at that time. Now, Ralph told me to go and watch Jonathan Bowden lectures, in that slightly haughty manner that Ralph has. And I suggest that it is actually Ralph himself who should go and watch Bowden's lecture on Evola. And this will be the fifth link now in the show notes to see that even though he imagines that with his talk of blood and soil and so on, that he is flanking me to the right, in actuality he is not. Because it's obvious he doesn't even know what perennial traditionalism is. Perhaps more time reading the books I mentioned and less time doing basic n-gram lexical analysis on my scripts might prevent you from making such errors in the future. And while we're talking about errors, Ralph was so bold to try to correct my logic at one point. He accused me of making the four-term fallacy because I had listed, the for freedoms of the EU. But if he'd taken my course, Foundations of Logic, he'd know that listing the EU's four freedoms on a slide is not a syllogism. I wasn't making an argument when I listed those four freedoms. It was simply a list of the EU's four freedoms. If I was going to write out an argument about the four freedoms in syllogistic form, it would look like this. The pause is caused by the four freedoms. We do not want the pause. Therefore, we do not want the four freedoms. Okay, Ralph, there's your three terms and the argument. Notably, an argument you did not in any way try to engage with. Now, what is that argument? Let's flesh it out a little bit. Here's Evola in an essay called The Problem of Decadence, and it will be necessary to quote him at length. He says, "It is absurd to believe that the true representatives of spiritual authority, that is to say of tradition, would set about running after all their subjects in order to grasp them and bind everyone to his own place. That, in short, these representatives act and have some sort of direct interest in creating and maintaining these hierarchical relations, by virtue of which they could visibly appear also as the leaders. The recognition from the inferior is, on the contrary, the true base of any normal and traditional hierarchy. It is not the superior who needs the inferior, but the inferior who needs the superior. It is not the duce who needs a private, but the private who needs a duce. The essence of hierarchy lies in the fact that there is in some superior beings, as a presence and as an actualized reality, what exists in the others only as confused aspiration, presentiment, so that the latter are irresistibly attracted by the former and they naturally submit to them, submitting in this not so much to something exterior as to their realer I. Here lies the secret of any readiness to sacrifice, of any heroism, of any manly dedication in the world of ancient hierarchies, and on the other hand, of prestige and authority, of a calm power and influence which not even the most heavily armed tyrant could ever have secured. This is the mystery of decadence. This is the mystery of any subversive revolution. The revolutionary has started by killing in himself hierarchy, mutilating himself of these possibilities to which correspond the inner foundation of the order, which he has then brought down also externally. Without a preliminary inner destruction, no revolution in the sense of anti-hierarchic and anti-traditional subversion is possible. And since this preliminary stage escapes superficial observation, the one who, with an obtuse short-sightedness, can only see and appreciate the facts, has to get accustomed to considering revolutions as a rational phenomena, and even to justify them by referring to materialist and social factors, which in any normal civilization only ever had, contrarily to this view, an absolutely secondary and subordinated function. When the Catholic myth refers the fall of primordial man and the revolt of the angels to free will, it basically relates to the same explanatory principle. It is about the terrible power inherent in man to use freedom in the sense of a spiritual destruction, to reject everything that can secure him a supernatural dignity. This decision is a metaphysical one, of which the whole current which has been snaking through history in the various forms of appearance of the anti-traditional, revolutionary, individualist, humanistic, secular, and finally modern spirit is only the manifestation and, so to speak, the phenomenology. This decision is the sole active and determining cause in the mystery of decadence, of the destruction of tradition. To acknowledge this also means to see under a different light not only the problem of decadence, but also that of the possibility in general of any subversive revolution. Don't we hear constantly that if a revolution has triumphed, it is a sign that the ancient leaders were weak and the ancient leading strata had degenerated? And so would it be, if ever it had been about chained wild dogs, which ended up biting the hands which fed them. This would obviously prove that the hands which had been holding firm, these animals were not, or are not anymore, strong enough. But things are different when the theory of the violent origin of the true state is rejected, and when we have the starting point of spiritual hierarchy, whose true foundations we have just pointed out. Such hierarchy may decay and be ruined only in one case, when the individual decays and when he uses his fundamental liberty to say no to the spirit, to deprive his life of any higher point of reference and set himself up as a stump. Contracts are then fatally interrupted. The metaphysical tension which united the traditional organism and made of the political process the counterpart of a process of elevation and of integration of the individual loosens. Any force becomes unsteady in its orbit, and finally, after the vain attempt to substitute the lost tradition for rationalist interpretations and utilitarian processes, frees itself from it. The heights remain pure and intact, but the rest, which as beforehand, as it were, suspended from them, will look like an avalanche, which, in an initially imperceptible, then accelerated movement, once the stability is lost, falls down to the bottom, to the levelling of the valley. Liberalism, socialism, en masse collectivism, communism. This being understood, we are able to comprehend the meaning of ancient traditions of a rather enigmatic nature, related to the leaders who, in a certain sense, already exist, having never ceased to exist, and who can be found again, themselves or their faiths, by means of actions described in various ways, but always of symbolic character. In fact, their search is equivalent to a reintegration, a creation of a certain attitude whose virtue is similar to the essential qualities by which a given metal suddenly feels the magnet, discovers the magnet and orientates and irresistibly moves towards the magnet. We will limit ourselves to this remark, which anyone who wishes to can easily develop. To deal in detail with this order of ideas and to explain the myths to which we have just alluded and that come from the oldest Indo-European antiquity would lead us too far. We may get back on another occasion to the mystery of decadence, of the magic able to bring back again the collapsed and unleashed mass, more than to temporary forms of order, to the unchanging peaks still suspended, invisible in the heights. All right, so there's a lot to unpack here, but note that Evola, as Carlyle did, sees liberalism, which is to say free market capitalism, in the 19th century tradition as a prerequisite of subsequent degradations and what he calls the levelling process, which then degenerates into socialism, en masse collectivism, and finally communism. This is a downward spiral, a necessary step, we should say, is democracy. Now, I have outlined elsewhere recently why liberalism, which is to say rule by merchant elites, will always tend to favour democracy. Liberalism is also a precondition for technological progress, which it seems that Ralph and almost everybody else seems to have forgotten. We can see by looking at the great divergence that liberalism facilitated the explosion in prosperity and technology after 1750. In Britain first, then everywhere else. Why? Because production processes became more capitalistic and roundabout. The length of the production process lengthened, which required capital investment. This saves time, which frees up labour, which increases the division of labour and facilitates yet more economic growth. Ralph attempted to try to paint technological progress as somehow being part of English tradition because it was the English who invented so many technologies. But these, Ralph, were the inventions of liberalism, afforded by liberalism, because capitalism and technological progress are the engine rooms of liberalism. You can't harness them to be against themselves. Entropy and levelling down is part of their very character. If you give 60 million plebs the option to watch porn, eat McDonald's and so on, they are always going to do that en masse. Always. Individuals en masse will choose the paths of least resistance. If a homeowner is given the freedom to sell to the highest bidder, he's not going to worry about if that bidder is an outsider from Pakistan or Israel or anywhere else. He's just going to take the money. Individuals thinking about their own separate interests aren't going to think about the community's interests. This much is obvious. It is in the interests of Bill Gates to buy up half the farmland in America. It's not in yours. If the option is there, scrupulous individuals can and will take it. Always. So sometimes the option must be taken away. It's also worth dwelling on the fact that because liberalism produces this prosperity and boom in technology, it also produces a population boom, which then starts presenting its own problems, problems of mass and scale. And if you go back and watch all of my old videos on James Burnham and managerialism and the elite theory, a lot of the problems of managerialism are problems of mass and scale. And as we have seen, as markets become more and more mature, and as they start to crystallize into monopolies and duopolies run by very, very big corporations, then technology as a kind of centralizing, when it's technology of mass and scale as opposed to small scale improvements at a local level, but big improvements which require economies of scale, require very, very complex processes, when you start to get that, you get this centralizing convergence. This is something that Uncle Ted talks about, I think very convincingly, and this is a problem. And now we're watching the technologies of the world start to converge and form this giant global cage. You know, people are talking about social credit systems coming in, afforded by digital currency and, digitized, centralized digital IDs. You know, people are talking about these things, and you could get to the point where you go to the supermarket to, I don't know, buy a steak or something, and the supermarket says, "Oh, sorry, you've had too much red meat this week, sir. It's bad for the environment." Or, "Sorry, we're not going to serve you at all because you haven't been vaccinated." Or, "Sorry, we're not going to serve you at all. You've got the wrong sorts of views." And that's a problem of mass and scale. You don't get that issue when it's an economy of, you know, individual bakers and butchers and so on, as in the sorts of scenarios we've been thinking about. So one of the whole reasons of thinking locally as opposed to globally and for trying to restrict and retard technology is because of that problem of mass and scale. Okay? Now, for all the spurging out about me dwelling on laws and economic processes rather than God and country, throne and altar, remember that this was an attempt by me to build a bridge from liberalism, which is the waters that we all swim in all the time, to tradition. A constant refrain in Carlyle and in Evola, as we just saw, is that we end up with the leaders that we deserve. And to find great men in the ashes is very, very difficult, since there are so many obstacles in the way of, you know, great men emerging, of people seeing the absolute truth and the transcendence, because we live in a very materialist culture, which is another aspect of the liberal, democratic, technological worldview that we all have, progress at any costs. Thus, even nominally great men, such as, let us say, Mussolini, are still ultimately subject to the mass man and the levelling downwards process. This is what Evola says in his book, Fascism Viewed from the Right. Now, I wanted to find a way to arrest that process artificially in my original video. You'll note that Evola says, in natural conditions, superior men will simply find minions willing to follow him, because there's something he is tapping in, the great man, to the absolute truth and to the transcendent, and hence, he rises and gains, a natural hierarchy arises. Carlyle, in his book on heroes, gives examples like Cromwell and Muhammad as being two such men. Okay. Superior men are born to lead and therefore rise as prophets or kings. But the ashes, as we know, strangle superior men, and the pause does all it can to emasculate them. Okay? Thus, conditions for tradition in such circumstances must be induced artificially. Spaces must be induced from the top down to allow for such a man to be born at all. Okay, I hope you can understand my thinking there. So anyway, I hope that explains a little bit more what I mean by capital T tradition. Obviously, this is a short video and I can't lay out, you know, dozens of books in this scope of time. But this is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about tradition and the reasoning behind why I laid things out as the way I did. Okay? Anyway, till next time, everyone. See you in the comments.
Now available at the Academic Agency. Sharpen your analytical mind and your argumentation skills with Foundations of Logic. The course draws on the ancient wisdom of traditional logic that students learned for over 2,000 years, from the time of Aristotle through to the medieval schoolmen, right down to the 20th century. Sign up now for a free preview lecture.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe, and if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.